Money Show.
Personal Finance with Warren Ingram.
Personal Finance brought to you by Satrix. Invest in global funds. Invest with Satrix. And there was a moment a week or so ago, I wondered whether we would ever hear of Warren Ingram ever again. He sent me a video clip of a recent trip to the bush. It sounds, George, does it not, quite eventful.
Back off!
There's an elephant.
Back off!
And it's right there next to the truck.
Back off!
Telling an elephant to back off.
Back off! Back off!
Revving. Wheel spin. Angry elephant.
Thanks, David.
But you survived.
It was unbelievable, I can tell you that.
Your hand wasn't shaking in the video at all.
No, I don't think there was time. I think it happened so unbelievably quickly that we were watching a wonderful, mom and baby elephant scene one moment, and the next moment the baby came running to us, and mom decided we needed to move or something else needed to happen.
And something else did happen. The elephant backed off. And as you then made your escape, your very courageous escape, the elephant gave you a little trumpet just to remind you as to who was really in charge. You've got the video to remember forever. Now, Warren Ingram, that was scary. Is it nearly as scary as this idea of prescribed assets? I think that's where we can start this evening. And the way we get to play with Warren into the future is give him this half hour to give us a topical topic, and then maybe answer one of your questions. So get your questions through to us thick and fast, and we'll pick the best ones. And then we're going to ask you, Warren, to wrap up every week with a word or a phrase, a piece of terminology that you and I perhaps use, believing that we understand, so therefore everybody else should understand what it is that we're talking about. There's somebody at the door. But anyway, prescribed assets. Are they as scared of? Are they as scary as the angry elephant mother?
I think it's a very scary concept, in all honesty. When it was raised by the ANC, at their conference, it was something for me that really it just felt like a body blow that the whole savings industry couldn't afford, and frankly that our economy couldn't afford. And so it was really just something that if it had gone through, I think would have caused massive economic damage, and huge change to investor sentiment at a time that we just couldn't tolerate any more negativity. So definitely a really scary concept.
Had it gone through, my sense of it is that it hasn't gone away. It's just sort of being parked in a back room of Luthuli House to be wheeled out at some point, either just before or just after the next ANC elective conference.
Well, I guess that's the difficulty with trying to forecast politics is that, it can change from one second to the next. But I think we've seen two very senior figures within the ANC, in the last couple of weeks, actually coming out and saying prescribed assets are off the table. And having read their commentary, my sense of that commentary is it's something we've investigated. It's something that was raised as a potential way of funding SOEs. And what we've realized as the ANC is that actually pursuing it will cause much more harm than it will do good. And therefore, we need to find another way to fund the SOEs. And actually, we might need to do a bit with retirement funds and the like. But certainly forcing retirement funds to fund state-owned enterprises is actually just not the path. So I probably... I'm always accused of being slightly too optimistic in life, but I think I'm going to disagree with you slightly. I think it is off the table until we have the new regime of the ANC, whatever that might be.
That's just what I said. it's parked as a convenient political pawn, and unfortunately, every time these issues are raised, and we could have told the ANC this and for nothing, and we did, that this was a bad idea because. And we could have saved a lot of time and a lot of uncertainty. This idea of prescribed assets, forcing pension funds to buy government bonds, for example, government bonds in Eskom or bonds in SAA, and say, we'll pay you a return. And in the low equity market environment which you've had for the last 5 years, I wonder why we would be so terrified of it, because, I mean, nothing could perform as badly as the JSE in the last 5 years.
So I think that's exactly the point. You know, I mean, I remember, I think I was sitting in the studio with you was it Future Growth that sort of unloaded their bomb, saying we're not funding Eskom anymore, and we're not funding, you know, a few other state-owned enterprises until their corporate governance is right. And I felt that was a seminal moment. But what a lot of people missed in that was also the comment that well-managed state-owned enterprises with good corporate governance and you know, enterprises that are delivering on their mandate have never struggled to raise funding from the bond market in South Africa because the yields are good. And so I think that's really the point here is I think pension fund managers would love to own more state-owned enterprises and potentially actually you know, even more direct ownership in big infrastructure projects, for example, where they can get certainty of return. Because I think that's the point. You know, if you've got a pension fund and you're managing a lot of money for people who need to earn an income, you can't rely on the stock market to give you all of that income. You need other sources of income from that. And that's where, you know, a bond or especially in a good project, you know, can make a heck of a difference, because all of a sudden you're getting, you know, let's say in the current interest rate environment where cash might only give you 5%, you're now getting 7% or 8% pretty certain income, you know, year after year after year for a defined period. And that becomes a really nice way to pay out income to your pension members, pensioners. And I think, you know, yes, you might still be in shares because they might one day give you capital growth again. But certainly, you know, our industry, the investment industry as a whole, is really, you know, not averse to buying government bonds, provided that they deliver the goods. So I think that's really the issue here is we, you know, the corporate governance issue got muddied up with raising funding for state-owned enterprises. And frankly, well-managed state-owned enterprises will not struggle in any environment to get funding because there is actually a demand for their yield.
So do we need, in your view, to be worrying about prescribed assets right now? Because a lot of people were worried about how they should treat their pension funds, whether or not they should be cashing in their pension funds and running for the hills, paying the taxes, getting out, simply because government was looking to go all nat on pensions. And the last time we tried this, it was an absolute blooming disaster.
Well, I think that's exactly the point. It was, you know, it was something done by a government that was, you know, frankly racing to the dinosaur age. You know, it was a government that had just no concept of the economy, and we're obviously talking about the apartheid era here, and it was really a problem. You know, it was something that was done because they were in the sanctions era and they were forcing, you know, all sorts of kind of irregularities in the way that markets behave. So where we are now, I think that you know, sanity has prevailed. Something was explored that probably should never have been explored. It should never have been on the table. But hopefully, and I'm saying this, you know, with let's say 60% degree of confidence that it is off the table. And I think it should stay off the table altogether. I think, you know, the regulatory regime around retirement funds should be so encouraging of investors on the one side, so the fund managers, to fund good projects, good state-owned enterprises, good businesses, you know, whether they be private or not, or listed, and you know, creating the environment for them to generate a good return for the pension fund members. On the other side, for you know, the ordinary people like you and me that just want to build up our retirement savings for our rainy day one day, you know, what we're looking for is a place to put our money where we're not faced with policy uncertainty or regulatory uncertainty the whole time, and this fear that our money is just going to go and, you know, feed the beast of corruption. And I think that's maybe where a little bit more work can be done on the retirement fund regulation, is to actually make sure that there is more oversight on the way that state-owned enterprises operate in the bond market. You know, when they go to raise money from investors, that actually investors are able to see right through those state-owned enterprises as to how they're managing the money, as if those were listed companies, you know, where there is proper transparency. So to me, I think there is an element of a greater transparency that needs to come in, a lot more accountability, and then I will not be surprised to see, you know, state-owned enterprises, the good ones, just raising more and more money. The bad ones need to disappear, and I think, you know, that's the change here. I think it did cause a huge amount of damage, to be honest. I mean, I can't tell you how many repeated conversations I had with people phoning me to say, you know, I'm 58, I'm only retiring at 65, but I'm actually going to take early retirement because I don't want the government to take my pension and give it to Eskom and give it to SAA again. I don't want, you know, my tax money's gone already. I can't have my retirement funds.
When you undermine confidence in your pension system, you really do suck the life out of an economy. And I'm afraid that's happened. And I'm not too sure the government has been nearly clear enough on its position on prescribed assets. I would like to see greater clarity and maybe any plans shredded and then incinerated in perpetuity. Now, we need to move on to a question, please. And this question, I think it's one that comes up quite often, and it's a fabulous question about interest rates, because interest rates are really low. They may go a little bit lower by the end of this year. But the question is, should I pay off my home loan slower and invest more money, or should I use this opportunity to pay off my home loan faster? Lovely problem to have.
It is, and I think it's a it's something that, as you say, a lot of people are looking at now and grappling with. And I think let's just start with the first principle, and then go into a couple of the issues around this. So the first principle to me is, one always wants to be debt free. I think that should be a starting point for any investor. You know, you don't really invest until you've paid off your debts. So if that's the case, then almost always rule number one is pay off your debts first, and then you worry about investing second. However, there are times when it makes sense to say, well, okay, let me rather take a little bit of my money, a portion of my money, and start to invest it because the conditions are right at the time. And what does that mean? So let's just say we're in normal conditions, normal markets, and we expect, stock markets to give us somewhere around 10 to 12% a year. I know that sounds like a joke because we haven't seen that for the last 5 years, but certainly that's historically what markets give us. And so if you can expect a return, hopefully not guaranteed, of 10 or 12% a year, and let's just say interest rates move back to normal levels and your mortgage is costing you 9% a year, that difference between the 9% and the 10% of the stock market, or 12% of the stock market, to me is far too small to warrant the risk of actually investing in shares when you only might earn 1 to 3 or 4%, let's say 1 to 3% a year more from the stock market, bearing in mind that the market might take away 30% of your value overnight, or it might jump 30%. That would be wonderful, but that difference is just too small. And the second part is the stock market growth will incur some kind of tax at some point. Probably will be capital gains tax, and so your returns will be slightly lower. Whereas when I look at a mortgage, I'm saying to myself, well, in a normal time, interest rate of 9%, it's almost like a guaranteed investment to me. I'm guaranteed that if I put extra money into my mortgage, I'm going to save that interest rate of 9%. And in a funny way, it's tax-free because you don't get taxed on interest you haven't paid. To kind of go the long way around. And so to me, I think that that's the avenue in looking at, whether you invest or whether you pay down your debt faster. So at the moment, if you've got a home loan and it's costing you, let's say, you're really lucky and it's only costing you 6% at the moment.
Because some people have got, prime is what, 7.257? I don't know, what
somewhere
is prime?
There, yeah.
Yeah, we don't know.
Right.
The interest rates have moved so much, but let's call prime 7 just for want of ease.
Keep the math simple.
Exactly, and you might have prime minus 1 because you may have a slightly older mortgage, and so you're only paying 6%, or you have prime minus 2 if you've got a really old mortgage, and suddenly you're only paying 5%. Now, I would argue that by throwing as much money as you possibly can at that mortgage, you are mitigating against the future risk of higher interest rates. Or are you going to take a bet that interest rates are going to stay low for such a long time that you don't need to worry about it?
I think the current regime within our Reserve Bank is generally favoring slightly higher rates than we are now. So I would say that I just wouldn't be surprised to see interest rates higher in 2 to 3 years from now. Maybe not going up by 3 or 4%, but I just think they'll be higher than they are now.
So a definitive answer to the question, please, Warren: do I pay off my home loan slower and invest more money, or do I pay off my home loan faster?
I would still pay off the home loan faster. I think that it is a good time. You know, view it as almost as if there's a sale, and that means pay off your home loan a bit faster. But at the same time, don't be shy to do a little bit of investment as well. But if you've got limited money, then put it all into the bond. If you've got a little bit more money, then put more into the bond. But then don't be shy to do investments as well. I think we're going to be surprised by the JSE over the next 5 years.
I look at it and I go, if all you do is keep the payments that you were making 2 years ago, so if it was costing you 10,000 rand a month and it's now costing you 6,000 rand a month in interest payments, keep paying the 10,000 rand or the 20,000 rand or whatever your bond was when interest rates were high, keep paying that amount. And you will reduce the capital amount of your bond fairly quickly. And then if you've got any spare, chuck that into investment markets.
Exactly. And I think that's a great point. I think that's, you know, the sale is on now, and that's in the interest rate environment. And that means, you know, take advantage of the low interest rates by paying off more capital. And that's always a good idea.
Warren Ingram is with us this evening, personal financial advisor, executive director at Galileo Capital. In a moment, Warren's weekly word or wonderful phrase. I need another word for phrase with a W because I need the alliteration so that we can play with those words. Warren's weekly word, we're going to be looking at that in just a moment.
The Money Show.
Personal finance with Warren Ingram.
Word of the week, phrase of the week. This is where we get to take some complicated jargon or just jargon. And you may think you know it or maybe you do know it, but there are a lot of people who don't understand much of the language that happens in the financial world. And so tonight, we're going active versus passive. Now, to my mind, everybody would understand this. But Warren, I don't think everybody does. So define the difference, if you would.
I actually think a lot of people don't understand it because, you know, a lot of the time when you talk about passive investing, people view that as, you know, you buy a few companies, you hold them for a long period of time, and you know, you don't trade them in and out, and then one day you sell them for a profit, and so that's, you know, it's kind of the Warren Buffett style, and certainly, you know, that's not the deal. So passive investing, another name for that would be called index investing, and just very simply, you know, it would be a case of saying in South Africa we've got the top 40 index. You can buy the 40 biggest companies on the JSE, but instead of as an investor buying them individually, you actually just go and say, I'm going to buy one thing, which is, let's go, the Satrix 40 for now, because that's the oldest one in the market. And I'm going to buy that one thing, and it's going to represent those 40 shares, and I do nothing else. I'm just going to buy that. And inside, it might change when those 40 companies change in size, but you as the investor are not doing anything. And in fact, the index manager is also not trying to decide what to buy and sell. They're simply waiting the biggest companies and then buying them in that instrument or in that investment. And so typically, that's what passive investing is. Obviously, like all product providers in the world, what happens is once we launch one index, other guys come into the market and they say, oh, hang on, you know, we're going to tweak this thing, and they make it very complex. But in its simplest form, passive investing is just buying the index and letting it go. And it's proved to be a very successful strategy both here and all around the world. But on the other side of that is the oldest part of the investment industry, and that's what they call active management. So that's, for example, we pay a fund manager, and we say to that fund manager, we're going to give you some money, and you're going to buy shares. But instead of just buying the index, what you're going to do is you're going to decide what companies you prefer to hold and what other companies you decide you don't want to hold, you want to avoid. And you're going to put them together in a portfolio, and you're actively going to decide when to hold them, when to sell them. So that becomes the what we would call active management. It does get more complicated because, for example, if you buy a balanced fund, then the fund manager is choosing individual companies, but also deciding to buy some cash, some bonds, potentially some gold, and mixing that with shares in the mix that the fund manager wants at the time, what the fund manager believes will deliver a good return in the future. So then you've got this the more active view. And I think that's been how the whole industry was built right around the world. And if you ask me the difference, the primary difference is really it comes down to fees. You know, a passive fund generally is much lower cost than an active fund. You know, in globally now, you can buy a passive fund that tracks the world stock market index for somewhere around 0.1% management fee in a year, whereas an active fund, a good one that's well priced, is probably costing you 1% a year. So there is quite a big difference in fees. And fortunately or unfortunately for the active managers, the passive managers are generally winning the race, you know, over 3, 5, 10, 15, and 20 years. So there's a lot to be said for passive investing, but there are the good active managers that have done better than the market, and you know, Warren Buffett being a case in point.
Warren Ingram, thank you very much indeed. He is a personal financial advisor, executive director at Galileo Capital. New time slot for Warren, new time slot for Pavlo. And our mantra, our motivation every day is going to be to help you manage your money better every day. More personal finance on The Money Show to assist you in making better investment decisions. Warren Ingram, thank you very much. Pavlo, thank you very much. And to everybody else who contributed to tonight's show. Thank you, and thank you for listening. It's 8 o'clock. Good night.